glimpse into the workings of the Persian Empire in the Bible. Yes, excellent. Who said Esther? You said it, and you said it. Excellent. Esther is a wonderful book, and in the book of Esther, you see this whole business about eunuchs and the. You remember Esther and the queen. What is the queen's name? Vashti, right? And the pageant show, and he wants to show off the beauty. Remember of all this. Okay, when you read that, you're going to read about the eunuchs, and as you read through Esther, you'll read about the a beautiful book about anti-Semitism and the lessons against dealing with God's with the Jewish people in any kind of harsh way. God really, I mean, the whole business with Haman and Mordecai, it's an amazing story. But this will help you to better understand what this all means in the book of Esther. By the way, we'll be studying, hearing about Xerxes the First. Xerxes, X-E-R-X-E-S is the way it's spelled. Xerxes is King Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. Ahasuerus is the Hebrew rendering of Xerxes' name. Just so that you know, and by the way, you can any Bible commentary will give you that, or study Bible will give you that. Okay, so if you want to plug that into a certain reign. Now, so what they did was they took these empires and they said, okay, here's what you're going to do. We conquered your country, but listen, the gods have sent us here. We offer sacrifices to your gods. We like you. Offering sacrifices to your God. Your God is the one who put us here. After all, we don't just walk into somebody's town without their God bringing us there. And the people are like, oh, well, hey, Cyrus, he's quite a guy. That's all right. And that's the way Cyrus would handle things. He was very, very efficient. And what he would do is he would set up a governor over a satrapy, and this governor would rule over that satrapy for him. Okay? And the satrapies began to grow until it got into the early 20s, 21 satrapies, I believe, total, that were all together. Okay? So he had a very well-administered nation, a very well-administered civilization. Now, the problem is going to come in when we start dealing with the Greeks, and we start dealing with this business between lies and truth. They're a very moral people. Okay, and they make deals and treaties with people, and as long as those treaties are abided to, in other words, if you make a treaty with a Persian king, that's fine, you've got a great ally, he will not break his treaty. You know why? He can't break his treaty, because he's getting his power from Ahura Mazda, the good lord. If he breaks his treaty, then he's associating himself with lies. Okay, the Greeks are going to lie to him. The Greeks are going to ask they're going to ask Darius for some help. They're going to ask him to become an ally. Here's what happens very briefly. I'm not going to get into all of the names and the dates and stuff. We're dealing around the year 500 BC. Okay. Here's what happens. The Greeks are made up of lots of little city-states. They're dotted all over the Aegean, all the way around the Aegean Sea. The Ionian coast, I showed you where Ionia is on the west side of Asia Minor there. All these little city-states are popping up, the polises. Now, each one is a government. You have to kind of think for a moment with me, and that's why Dr. Kito does such a great job with this. You have to think for a minute. You say, yeah, but they're all Greeks. Aren't they friends? No, they're not. Most of them can't stand each other, and they're constantly beating each other to pieces. The Spartans are like, they're unbelievable warriors. They're into fighting. They like it a whole lot. And they go around in the Peloponnesus, which is that, let me actually show it to you since we got this hooked up here. I guess the best map I have would be right here. Yeah, I think that's the way that one works. Okay, let's see.
There's a map in the book.
Yeah, I want to put this up so you can see it, though. Yeah, well, this is not the best one we could have, but it's a good one, but it's kind of small. Okay. Bless you. Okay. I don't like that very much. Let me just look really quick. You'll all notice I haven't even taken a sip of that coffee yet. It's cold now, I don't even want it. I quit drinking coffee altogether, I tell you that. I don't know why you want to tempt me this way. It's not right, you're supposed to be my friends. Okay, we're looking for the Peloponnesus. Let's go to Greece. Okay, let's use this. This is my map that I was going to use later tonight on the Persian Wars, but we'll use it now. Okay? This is, don't get confused with all of this. This is, okay, this is the Aegean Sea. This is the sea, okay? This is Asia Minor, right in here, which is all part of the Persian Empire. See that? Sardis, right, which was the capital of the Lydian Empire, okay? So this is the coast. Down here you have Ephesus. You have Miletus. You have the seven churches of Asia Minor in the book of Revelation. They're all in here, okay? And then you have this sea over here, okay? Now the sea, if you go right across the Aegean Sea, you come to Greece. This is known as the Greece mainland, okay? Because it's the mainland. This is known as the Peloponnesus, which is, it's separated by this thing here. This is all water. It's called the Gulf of Corinth. And there's a little isthmus right here, a little land, a little strip of land that connects the mainland Greece to the Peloponnesus, okay? You see how that's separated? All right, now, the kings of the Peloponnesus is without a doubt Sparta. There's all these little city-states dotted everywhere in here, okay? And what Sparta does is basically conquers them all. And they say, haha, we're tougher than you are. We're Sparta. And they become the rulers of the Peloponnesus. Over here in Athens, they are also very... it's not that they have a really, really powerful military, but they have a lot of patriotism. Very, very patriotic, the Athenians. We are the best Greeks. We are the finest Greeks. We're the most intellectual Greeks. These guys down here are jugheads. They're fighters. That's all they do is fight. No kidding. All they do is fight. Over here, they're intellectual. And when we get into Greece, you're going to see just how intellectual they are. You probably won't understand a lot of what they're trying to say. I'm serious. These guys are real thinkers. Philosophy begins here in Ionia. And Ionia right here, the coast of Ionia. Now, you see how this makes a big horseshoe? Okay. Dotted all around here are Greek colonies. Polises. The poli. A polis is a city-state. And there are little Greek city-states all around here, okay? Eventually, what happens is the Persian Empire comes out and wipes out all of the Ionian Greek city-states. Okay? Everybody get the idea? All right. So here's what happens. This is a situation where this guy takes over Athens. He's a tyrant. And he takes over Athens. His name is Pisistratus, is the name of this tyrant. And he comes in and he sets up a government. And he gets the Athenians really, really patriotic. We're the best. Don't you know? Nobody can take the Athenians. We are top shelf, top notch. No doubt about it. We're the best. Well, we got the leader of the Athenians, who was kicked out by Pisistratus, leaves and goes to Persia. And he goes to see Darius. And he says, get me out of my country. A man without a country. Oh, sit down, have a seat. We'll take care of you. Because Darius knows that it's a good thing to have kings and rulers who have been kicked out of their countries. It's a good thing to hang on to them. Number one, they know a lot about the country when he decides to attack, right? Number two, when the time comes where he takes over that country, he can take him and set him as his satrap. See what I mean? He already knows the country, and now he's a servant to the Persian king, and now they've got another satrapy. Well, here's this guy, Pisistratus, now, okay? So just let's call this guy Bozo. I'm not going to give you his real name, and the reason I'm not going to give you his real name is because I can't remember it. But he leaves, and he comes over. It begins with an H. You know what? Let me get it for you. I ought to do this correctly. The guy's name is, ready for this? Hippias. H-I-P-P-I-A-S. Hippias is the leader, okay? There you go, okay? You got it out of me. Fine, okay? Be that way. He goes to Persia. He says, I can't handle this. Kicked out of my country and everything. He goes to Persia. Here's Pisistratus in Athens now. Pisistratus is in control of Athens. He's a tyrant, but you know what? He gets the people riled up. Where the best do you know you're an Athenian? Excuse me, sir. But did I happen to tell you that you were an Athenian? The greatest of the Greeks? You're not like those jugheads down in Sparta. Well, the jugheads hear about this. And they say, hey, we're not going to put up with double time, huh? They march into Athens and they take this bird. Well, he's already died. His son is on the throne now. And this is right about 500 BC. And this guy's son is on the throne. Pisistratus' son is on the throne. And the Spartans come in and they throw this guy off the throne. They go, huh, huh. And then they really, that's all they do is just throw him off the throne. And they figure, hey, boy, the Athenians are going to like us because we got rid of the tyrant. Not at all. The Athenians like the patriotism. They're patriotic. And now all of a sudden the Spartans say, well, we saved the day. I guess you're a part of the Spartan League now, the Peloponnesian League. And the Athenians say, no, we're not. Call us a jughead. We wouldn't have anything to do with you. We don't. So what they do is they revolt. And they attack the Spartans. And listen to this. Push them out of Athens. Well, folks, when the smoke settles, they're all partying, they're having a good time, and then all of a sudden the knees start knocking because they know the Spartans are coming back. And when the Spartans come back, they know that their heads are going to get crushed and everything. They're going to be in big trouble. The Spartans are tough. These are tough guys. Remember I told you last time about the guys that, you know, they say, okay, you get 300 of your guys and they'll duke it out, and there's like one guy left and he's taking all. I mean, these guys are into fighting. They like it a lot. So the Athenians throw this guy out. Now all of a sudden they're all standing there, we're in trouble. They're coming back. We don't even have a prayer. What are we going to do? Aha. Let us send some ambassadors to Hippias, who's in the Persian Empire, over here, way over in the Persian Empire in Susa, and let us send a request with our ambassadors for them to come help us. Because listen, if the Spartans are jugheads and everything, but if they know that the Persian Empire is backing us, come on, the Persian Empire is like the biggest army in the world. It's insane. Nobody's ever even heard of this many people. Never mind being in an army coming after you. he says, no way in the world are these people ever going to come against us. Okay. Off go the ambassadors, and they go to Susa, and there's Darius, and of course Hippias is there, and they say, oh, you know, humble Darius, Darii, and we thank you so much for your nice guy-ness and all this, and we ask that you would be our friend. And he says, did you bring the offering? And they said, yes, we did. And here's the offering, folks. This is the way you did it back in these days with the Persian kings. You had to bring a handful of dirt from Greece and a cup full of water from the Greek waters. And when you gave that handful of dirt and that cup full of water to Darius, you know what you were saying? We're now a satrapy. We're giving you our dirt. We're giving you our land. And we're giving you our water. Fine, he says, I'll take it. I will be your friend and I will, no problem, okay? So they go back. Well, in the meantime that all this is happening, isn't this an unbelievable story? Is everybody following me?
Yeah.
Okay, because I got a tendency to ramble. While all this is happening, all of a sudden, the Athenians get a good army together. I mean, a good one, a tough army. And they start thinking, hey, we don't need the Persian army. We could take them any day. And so you know what they do? They renege on their deal with Darius. You know what? I'm going to tell you what's happening. What is it? You know what they've done? They've allied themselves with Ahuriman, and they must be punished. Get the idea? They have allied themselves with the lie, and now they must be punished. They can't be allowed to get away with this. Oh, no. Why? Because Darius is sitting there. Darius is a great administrator, not really making that much war. You know, he's doing some things, but not really making that much war. By the way, there's a lot more notes on Persia that I have in this thing. I kind of step through the career of the major generals and stuff. You can read it when you get home. But the thing is, they've allied themselves with the lie, and therefore they have to be punished. Darius cannot allow this to go unpunished. All right, then. This begins a series of... Oh, besides this, I also ought to mention the fact that the Athens and I can't remember the other city-state, but Athens is one of them. When the Ionians get themselves into some trouble, they ask for help from their brothers on the mainland in Greece, and the only ones who help them, there's only two that help them. One is an island, and I can't remember the name of it. It begins with an E. I'll remember it eventually. But the other one is Athens. The little island that begins with an E sends 5 ships over. Athens sends 20 ships. But that's problems. Because when they send 20 ships, you know what they're doing? They're helping someone rebel against the Persian Empire. Because here's what the Ionians do. Okay? Let's put our map back up and I'll show you. Just how this whole thing comes together now. Okay? Here is the Ionian city-states, and they've been captured by the Persians, okay? The Ionian city-states get together, folks, and they take the ships and the things that are sent over in the ships from the Athenians and from this other island. Oh, I wish I could remember it. It's aggravating. It's not on the map either, is it?
Not Crete?
No. No, it begins with an E. Okay, anyway, it's one of these little islands in the Aegean. But anyway, these 25 ships now, they take the stuff, and you know what they do with this help? They get together a little coalition, and they attack. Remember now, we're talking about the Persian army, the Persian Empire. These little Greek city-states get together, and they attack Sardis, okay? Which has become a key point for the Greeks, and which has become a key point for the Persian Empire, and they burn it to the ground. Now, when Darius hears about this, he's fit to be tied, number one. He wants to know who's involved, and guess whose name comes up? Athens. Okay, we got problems. So, hence, we begin a series in American history. And I'll tell you what. Listen, I teach World History 1, and World History 1, World History 2, American history and philosophy to the seniors. And then I do this on Monday night. So I run these things together sometimes. I apologize. That's how we get off on Columbus sometimes. I don't know. Just bear with me, please. The idea is this, okay? He wants to know who's involved, and Athens comes up. Now, Athens has allied themselves with Ahuriman. They have to be punished, and we begin a series of wars known as the Persian Wars, okay? The Persian Wars are phenomenal. And we're going to see the linoleum, aluminum. And we're going to see that, we're going to see the Persian Wars when we come back. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, take a breather, get some fresh air. When we come back, we're going to hit the 3 major battles in the Persian Wars, and they are outstanding. Wait till you see it. It's one of those rare moments in history where you really go, wow, that was unbelievable. Okay? So come back, and we'll continue then. Okay, we're going to get rolling here. We have a lot to cover in the next 52 minutes. And I promise to take every minute of those 52 minutes. We have 3 more big battles to cover, so let's get started. Let's give one last grace call here. Okay. We have the Persian Wars. Now, I've decided to do the Persian Wars in one... Yes?
The island
you were
talking about, is it
E-U? D-O-E-A? The island is Eritrea.
That's
I'm going to write it on the board. This was the island that I was talking about, E, R-E-T-R-I-A. It's on the notes in the Persian War. Right there under point 6, letter C. See it? I couldn't think of it. All these, the names kind of bleed together after a while. Okay, now listen. Here's the deal. Everybody get the idea? The stage is set. Persia's mad. Greeks are like, huh, now what? Okay? Now begins one of the most outstanding segments of all of military history in the world. Three major battles, actually four. I usually clip off the fourth one. The fourth one, you want to study it on your own, it's the Battle of Plataea. It's kind of, I call it a mop-up battle. You know, they were kind of mopping up. It was no big deal. The big deal is this. First of all, Battle of Marathon. Second of all, Thermopylae, the Battle of Thermopylae Pass. And fourthly is the Salamis Bay. This is my map of the Persian Wars, okay? If you take out your sheet on the Persian Wars, you can follow along with me with what happens. At the outset of the 5th century, century B.C., the western expansion of the Persian Empire threatened the isolation and independence of the Greeks. Everybody understands that, right? Okay? Persia is expanding, and they've taken over Ionia, so that's causing problems. It's not giving the Greeks anywhere to expand, either. Persia, under Cyrus the Great, expanded west into Asia Minor, conquering the Lydians. No problem now. You guys know who they are, right? Conquering the Lydians, as well as Greek colonies along the coast of the Aegean Sea, Ionia. By the way, if this is a little bit Mickey Mouse, this is for my 7th grade. I used this for my 7th grade. I did this last year. So this is not a new one. The new one is this one here on the Persian Empire. So if it's a little Mickey Mouse, you understand why. The Persian War, the one that says the Persian War. That's why it says Mr. Jagir on the top instead of Jean Jagir, okay? So, did that just click? Oh, okay. All right, so yeah.
So I am not confused.
Okay.
The Ionian coast is what?
Okay. See this coast right here?
Yeah.
This coast right here.
Oh, there it is. I see. Okay.
Is Ionia. Okay. All along the coast, okay? As you go up here, there is a piece of water, a strip of water known as the Hellespont or the Dardanelles. The Dardanelles Straits, okay? But the Hellespont, we call it the Hellespont. That's this right here. It's a strip which is only about a mile wide, which separates the continent of Asia with the continent of Europe. So very important. And we're going to see tonight how Xerxes is going to get across that thing. It's unbelievable. He's going to use almost 600 ships all tied together to get across. Okay? All right, so listen to this. Cyrus the Great conquers the Lydians as well as Greek colonies on the coast of the Aegean Sea, that's Ionia. The freedom-loving Greeks could not tolerate Persian domination. After Darius, you can see how simplified this is. I'm almost embarrassed to give this to you fine scholars. After Darius became the king, Ionia, with the support of Athens, overthrew Persian rule, the Ionian Revolt. Persia crushed the... Now, you're all with me up to this point, right? Remember, what did they do? The Ionians, what did they do? They attacked Sardis and burned it to the ground. Okay? The Ionian Revolt. Ionia revolted. It was very revolting. No. They had I saw this thing on television, where are the women... where are the Revolutionary War women? Council of the Freedom-Loving Revolutionary War. And it's like all these big, strong, like, you know, they're like the women of the Revolutionary War Guild. And where our motto is, and they all say it together, we're still revolting. I thought it was funny. I guess you had to see it yourself. We're still revolting. Okay. So number 5, Persia crushed the rebellion and was determined to punish Athens. This is the same Darius who greatly assisted the Israelites in the reconstruction of the temple at Jerusalem, Ezra 6:1 and 6-12. Of course, you all knew that. Now, the Battle of Marathon. Here we go. Here comes the first series of the Persians against the Greeks, okay? Now, the summer of 490 B.C., told you it was right around 500. Summer of 490 B.C., Darius dispatches 25,000 troops in 600 ships. Darius. dispatches 25,000 troops in 600 ships. Persian forces quickly defeated Eretria. By the way, I'm really simplifying this because they defeated, what they did is they started island hopping. Got you, got you, got you. And Eretria was a very big one. They're the ones who sent that those five ships to Ionia. And you know what? They really paid for it because they were burned to nothing. They were disintegrated, okay?
Where were they?
They're one of these islands. It's not labeled, but they're one of these islands in the Aegean Sea here, okay? So they were really punished. They were punished, and now they're going to Athens, okay? See what they're doing? They're leaving Persia. Here's the boat. This is the Battle of Marathon here. The boats are coming. They're going to Athens, okay? They don't land at Athens, though. They land at Marathon, which is about 25 miles. In fact, 26 point something miles away from Athens, okay? And that's where they end up fighting the Athenians. Okay, watch this now. The Persian forces quickly defeated Eretria. Persian troops landed at the Bay of Marathon, about 25 miles northeast of Athens. So here's Athens, northeast, right there. See it? About 25 miles, a day's march. Though greatly outnumbered, the Athenians marched to meet the Persian army. They didn't do this because they wanted to. They were hoping that their buddies, the Persians, they were hoping that their buddies, the Jugheads, would come and help them. And as a matter of fact, the Jugheads were on the way, but they weren't fast enough. It was basically, here's the deal that they had. We can sit here and wait until Persia marches in and kills our women and children in Athens, or we can all the men get together and go and march against them and fight them, and who knows what will happen, but at least we won't do it in Athens. Get the idea? They can't wait for the Jugheads to come, so Sparta is still on their way. They're no help in the Battle of Marathon. This is what is so amazing about this. They win this war without the Spartans. This is like unbelievable. 250,000 soldiers. Come on, are we for real? Against the Athenians, they've all got books. What are they going to do? Throw books and bookmarks at them? You know. So here we go. Listen to this. Herodotus describes the battle. By the way, according, if we believe Herodotus, the Persians don't have 2,500. I mean, they don't have 2,500 soldiers. They have 3 million. You know, so he's going to beef things up a little bit. Nobody, by the way, nobody in the world believes Herodotus on that number. An army of 3 million in the ancient world is just a little too much for, you know, even, you know, even Herodotus is like, he must even went, no, 2 million. Ah, what the heck, 3 million, you know. Here's what he writes. That's a lot of ancient world. Come on, be for real. Herodotus describes it this way. This is a direct quote from him. So when the battle was set in array, instantly the Athenians charged the barbarians. One thing about the Greeks, and Dr. Quito does a beautiful job of pointing it out, anybody who is not a Greek is a barbarian. And barbarian does not mean necessarily it's not like looking down on them per se. It means, the Greek word is barbar. They talk like barbar, 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 barbar. That, you know, they don't talk Greek. So a barbarian is basically anyone who's non-Greek. That's the idea. Now, barbarian today, you think of Otto. You know, you think of, you know, the hunk of meat, big thing of bear, and, you know, not an ounce of brains between his ears, right? But that's not the idea of a barbarian. And Quito does a beautiful job in the introduction of bringing that out. Okay? So listen to this now. Here he goes. Now, the distance between the two armies was a little short of 1 mile. The Persians, therefore, when they saw the Greeks coming on at a speed, they made ready to receive them, although it seemed to them that the Athenians were bereft of their senses and bent upon their own destruction, for they saw a mere handful of men coming on at a run without either horsemen or archers. Such was the opinion of the barbarians, i.e. the Persians. But the Athenians, in close array, fell upon them and fought in a manner worthy of being recorded. You know what they did? Here's what these Athenians did. Absolutely brilliant. And one of the key things in warfare, and oh boy, I wish, I'll tell you what, if I were a millionaire, which I'm not, so don't even think about it, but if I were a millionaire, I'd buy you all a copy of this book. It's outstanding. And it will explain to you just how these wars were won. It's incredible. If you like this kind of stuff, see if you can get it. You know what? I may have bought it a year ago. It may be out of print, but it's got a copyright date of 1992, first paperback edition, right here. If you can still get it, get it. This guy's the associate professor of history at Cornell University. Very, very good. So here's what he does, okay? Here's the brilliant thing. The Athenians say, we don't have any chance whatsoever of fighting this like a real war, so we have to go nuts on them. And they go absolutely bananas, and they just run at them, and they go, ah! And they're flailing their swords, and they're meeting them, and the Persians are like, what's going on here? They can't even get in their chariots. They can't even mount the attack. They can't get on their horses and get their cavalry ready, and they're like, what's going on? Here come these crazy Greeks attacking like this. And you know what? The Greeks end up killing 6,000, if we can believe Herodotus. He may have beefed this number up too. But if we can believe Herodotus, the Greeks end up killing 6,400 men, and only about 194 die. That is unbelievable. What? The numbers? It's right here in the paper. It's right here in the paper. Hold on. On page... Where is it? Yes, under I. Page 2I. I got the numbers right? Yes. 6,400 Persians, but only 192 Greeks fall at Marathon. Greek infantry? No? In that case, I'll give you 5 points on the next exam if anyone knows. No? 10 points? No? 100 points? No? I'm being funny. They were called hoplites. H-O-P-L-I-T-E-S. Those are just in case you're interested. Now, but you know what? They went absolutely bananas on these guys, and they won. They won. They're all in Marathon. They chased the Persian Empire. A handful of nutty intellectuals chased the Persian Empire out of Marathon, and they won the Battle of Marathon. They saved, listen to this, you know what? Their women didn't get raped that night. You know what? Their kids didn't get killed that night. This city didn't get burned that night. It gets burned a week later. The city didn't get burned that night. They were happy. It was party time, and it was like when Rushdagal was in hell and Dumuzi is having that big party. It's party time. So immediately they tell this runner, this famous runner, Pheidippides. I didn't make that name up. There's no way I could make that. Pheidippides, take the message quickly to Athens, 26 point whatever it is miles. 26.2 miles, okay. We have a marathon runner in the back, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Rogers in the back. The Pheidippides runs the 26.2 miles from Marathon to Athens, and he says, "We won!" And drops dead of exhaustion. That's how the story goes, okay? Again, you know who we're believing for that, right? Okay. He's a great guy. I love this guy. I really do. I love reading him. He's so much fun. Listen, if you're going to teach history, make it boring. If you're going to embellish it a little bit, well, you know, I mean, come on. You know, the way he writes is really entertaining. I don't know if any of you have ever read Thucydides. Thucydides is the first scientific historian. Forget it. You're sleeping big time. Soren Wood. Peloponnesian Wars. When we study the Peloponnesian Wars, which is the war between Sparta and Athens, the guy who records all of that is Thucydides, and he didn't embellish anything. It's all facts. And you know what? Reads like an almanac. It is boring. We'll take Herodotus and his fairy tales any day. He's much better. Okay, so that's the Battle of Marathon. Outstanding? Isn't that outstanding? Okay. You know what, though? We've got some big problems because there's no way Darius can let this go. Guess what's happened, folks? What do you think's happened?
Probably
the
kingdoms
have revolted. No. What has happened in the cosmos?
Darkness.
Darkness has triumphed over light. The truth has triumphed over the lie. I mean, the lie has triumphed over the truth. Not to be accepted. This is not good. We've immediately got to deal with this. And he comes back, and by the way, on the way back, there's this general. I wish I could remember his name for you. I'm sorry, but the names at this point, if I can remember five of them, I'm doing okay. If I can remember what war we're teaching, I am doing okay. The admiral goes back. Oh, I do remember his name. His name is, it's almost like Darius. It's like, let me get it for you. It won't take me a minute. It's like, this guy. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. He had a problem. We don't know what happened to him when he got back. He was the admiral of this fleet that goes over for Darius. Darius didn't go. I'll find it for you here in just a second. What? Datis. D-A-T-I-S. That's his name. D-A-T-I-S. He's the admiral. Admiral Datis. And Datis is the admiral that brings these 600 ships over. He's got to go back. Oh, by the way, you will never guess who's on the ships with him. Hippias.
Yeah.
Hippias. 60s. You know, think of 60s. Hippias is on the ship with him with his bell bottoms. He's going back to Athens because no problem. Of course, the Persians are going to have no problem wiping out Athens and putting this guy back on the throne, and they're going to become a satrapy. No problem. Well, I like what this guy says. He says, Hippias had the good sense to die on the way back. He says, we don't know what happened to Datis when he got back. He without a doubt was killed. I mean, the Persians were pretty wild. When Xerxes sent a fleet of ships to circumnavigate Africa, and they came into some terrible weather, and they had to turn back, and they were all killed. It's like, you didn't make it. Oh, okay, kill them. You know, that's the way they dealt with things. Okay, let's move on now. Thermopylae Pass. This is you know, all these are kind of, it's a tie. They're all my favorite battles. I really like the, next to the Punic Wars, which we'll study when we get to Rome, these are like my favorite battles. Where do you hear about Hannibal when he brings his elephants across the Alps? You ever hear that story? Guy's going to attack Rome with elephants. The Second Punic War, he's bringing elephants in the mountains. We're going to get them. Now, do you know how much food you need to feed elephants? All the way up from Africa, across into Spain, up through the Pyrenees, and he's coming down into Italy. Do you understand that? It's like, well, you don't have it on... Well, forget it. We'll get to it, all right? I promise you. We'll teach it. Now, watch this. Furious over this setback, Darius organized a full-scale invasion of Greece, but he died before he could execute it. His son comes to the throne, and his son is Ahasuerus, or Xerxes I. We're going to call him Xerxes because that was his name. Okay? Now, Xerxes appointed a servant. Listen to this. Xerxes appointed a servant to sit at his feet every day and keep telling him, Master, remember the Athenians. Master, remember the Athenians. Master, your father's honor, Ahura Mazda, has been triumphed over by Ahriman. Remember the Athenians. Remember the Athenians. Is that insanity or what? Watch this. The Battle of Thermopylae. Here, oh, this is great. Xerxes assembles a huge army with which to invade Greece. He's got to transport this army, and he's got to get them over the Hellespont. And I told you a little bit about this. That's my problem. I get ahead of myself, and then all my good stuff is already gone by the time we get to it. Here he is. There's a one-mile thing here across the Hellespont. He comes up with this idea. Let's build some bridges. Let's build two bridges, one for supplies, one for troops. Okay? So he gets some engineers. He gets two groups of engineers. One are Greek engineers, and one are Egyptian and Phoenician engineers. They're going to show him, your engineers, this is your job. How do we build these bridges? Well, we take these 674 ships and we tie them all up. Now, you got to even imagine this, okay? These are ships like this, folks. Here's the ship, okay? Ship tied up next to a ship. This is the looking at it from the top, okay? Tied up next to a ship. Tied up next to a ship like this. 674 ships. Big Phoenician ships. Big. One thing about the Persian, everything is big. And you know what? It costs them every time. Alexander's running around knocking everybody out with 30,000 people. These guys have 1 million people. And they're like, how are we going to get them all across? I don't know. wreck all our ships doing it. They get all their ships, and then they take the ships and they put sticks. Oh, they tie them all up, of course. They tie them all together. Then they put sticks and dirt and gravel and leaves and stuff like that, and they press it all down. They made a bridge so that they can march across. Okay, watch this. This guy is out of his mind, okay? Xerxes is out of his mind. They tied together the ships with ropes, and they laid plank roadway across the decks. On the planks, they laid brush, with which they covered with dirt and pressed it to make a solid surface. Sounds like a plan, right? Watch this. Remember one thing, though. There's one problem with this plan. They're on the water. And water moves, okay? It always does. That's the thing about water. The process was nearly complete when a storm comes up and destroys the bridges. Now, can you imagine the work that's involved in making two bridges like this? A storm comes up and destroys the bridges. Xerxes, furious, has his chief engineers beheaded, and he orders the Hellespont beaten with 300 lashes. So some guy is out there thinking, my king is an idiot. And he's got a whip, and he's going, one lash, Xerxes, I gave him. Two lashes, your majesty, Xerxes. He's like, yeah, whip that ocean 300 times, okay? He's out of his mind. Now watch this, okay? Watch this. Under the direction of a Greek engineer, Xerxes builds two new bridges the exact same way. Greek engineer says, no, I've got a better way to do this. What we'll do, rather than doing it the old way, the way these imbecilic Phoenician and Egyptian engineers did it, what we'll do this time is we'll take 674 boats and we'll put plank over the top and some brush and dirt, and we'll pat them down to make a nice hard surface, and then we'll march across. And Xerxes says, yeah, that sounds like it's better than the other plan. So they do it, and this time it's successful. And they get everybody across. Now watch this. Under the direction of the new engineer, they build the bridges in the same way. And in late March, 480 BC, Xerxes dedicated the bridges by throwing a golden cup, B, a golden bowl, and I know what you were thinking, golden silverware, right? No, wrong you are. A war sword into the water. Then taking several days, the Persian army crossed the bridges into the continent of Europe. Can you imagine this troop movement? This is like insane. And this guy's like, he is so entertaining. You really ought to. How many are even thinking of buying this? Be real. One, two, three, good, four, good. It's worth buying. If you're interested in battles, these are not just ordinary battles. These are the way people lose battles. And it's really phenomenal. Okay, watch this. It's linoleum. It's aluminum. It's phenomenal. Okay, I think I can't spoke. Here we go. The delay gave the Greeks the time that they needed to organize and unite. Now, by this time, the jugheads have arrived. And the jugheads are not very good thinkers, but they are very good warriors. No doubt about it. They're outstanding. Yes?
That's what I'm confused about. The last time you talked about the Athenians and Sparta, Sparta was coming back to fight with them.
Oh, they hate each other. They absolutely.
How are they helping them?
Yes, okay, let me explain that. Good point. Why? Why are they hating them? That's right. They've united against a common enemy. In other words, Sparta does not love Athens. But you know what Sparta knows? Sparta knows that if the Persians blow through Athens, it's only a wing and a prayer before they blow through Sparta. So, you know, it's united we stand, divided we fall kind of thing. No love lost. Okay? But believe me, I mean, they win this war, and they're at war with each other within before you know it. Yes?
I'll give you an analogy to that.
Yeah.
The Army and the Navy and the Marines.
Exactly.
They would go out and fight. The Navy and the Marines hate each other. But yet, they'll go to get together to fight the Army.
That's true. The Navy and the Marines do not get along. I was in the Navy, believe me, I know. And the funny thing is like the Navy has the real big mouths, and they always get beat up by the Marines. The Marines. Let's face it. You know what they are? They're the Spartans. I went to Navy boot camp, and most of Navy boot camp is all thinking. It's all going to school, academics. Marine boot camp isn't quite the same way. It's Spartan. Okay, listen, I love the Marines. If you were a Marine, don't hate me, be my friend. Okay, now watch this. The Greeks are divided, and you can understand this very easily. They've got a problem. The Athenians and the Spartans both have different strategies here. Here's the idea that the Spartans come up with. Just to prove to you, in case you were wondering, maybe they are thinkers, this is their idea. No, here's what we ought to do. We ought to see this isthmus right here. We ought to stand here and defend the isthmus. The Athenians are saying, hey, that's our nation on the other side. That's our country on the other side. Why would we stand here and defend the Peloponnesus? This is our home. So they finally, oh man, you guys don't know nothing about war. Finally, they come up with a resolve. They are going to meet the Persians at Thermopylae Pass. Thermopylae Pass is right here. And it is you got a picture. I have pictures somewhere of it, and I've never been able to use it ever in a class because I always can never remember where I saw this picture, but it's amazing. It's a very difficult chasm-like. Here's the problem with Thermopylae. It's like big mountain here, and you're like in the middle, like in the valley. Get the idea? So here's the idea. Persia's got all these people, right? But only a few of them can get through at a time. So you know what? The big army, again, is ineffective. They're only as effective as their front line. The front line falls, guess what? Okay, now it's the next line's time to fight. So you see what I mean? So they're bottlenecked in there. Now, the amazing thing about this is, here come the Spartans. Ready? Okay. Spartans are in there. Get back at me, you Athenian. I got this guy. You know, and the Spartans are in the front, okay? Now what happens is it comes to the point where they're holding them down very well, but one of the Greeks is a traitor and tells, because the Persians don't know how to get around the pass, a Greek is a traitor and he tells the Persians how they can get around the pass. So now they're in trouble. Because if they get around the pass, here's the army. Where are we here? Here's the army. If they can come around like this, they're in trouble. Because now they're trapped on both sides. You get the idea?
There was a movie on that, you know.
Oh, an old, old one.
Real good.
The 300 Spartans. Yeah. That was the name of it.
Yeah. Right.
It was black and white, and now it's colorized.
I
tried to get the videotape. I mean, it's not all really, you know, it's like, you know, like this guy. But it's a good movie. That's right. It's history. It's history. Now, here's the thing. When they realize that they've been betrayed, they've got to do something, okay? And of course, the Spartans come up with the idea. Now, it's a good idea for everybody but the Spartans. The Spartans say, 300 of us will stay here. You guys go ahead. So here are 300 Spartans now fighting the whole Persian army. They're all bottlenecked inside Thermopylae Pass, and they're holding them there, and they know they're about to get it eventually. Well, they fight valiantly to their death. Obviously, they're going to get killed. And I'm making light of it, but they're very valiant men, and they died for the sake of everybody else so everybody else could get away. Well, everybody else skedaddles, as my uncle Jerry used to say, skedaddles. They skedaddle to Athens, realizing that they don't have even a prayer now. You know, when you come to the point where you don't even have a prayer. What they do is they come and they realize, okay, what we've got to do here is we have got to do what all valiant men have done when they've realized that they do not have a prayer, and that is run away. So they're taking all their family and their stuff and getting it on boats, and they move to this island right here, Salamis. This little island, Salamis, okay? Now, jugheads are still up here holding the fort. Finally, the Persians break through. They come down and they burn Athens to the ground. It's gone, okay? All right, now, you like that story? That's the Battle of Thermopylae Pass. You see why I love these wars? I'll tell you what. Doesn't it make you just want to get into a war with somebody so we could have things like this happen to us? Yeah, me too. Okay, last one we're going to deal with, and we got 20 minutes left. We may even let you out of here 10 minutes early. The big thing is now they're all trapped. like pigs on this island. And they're really in trouble, okay? The Persian army has come through. Great, the Spartans fought valiantly and everything, but the bottom line is we're trapped. Well, here's what they do. Remember the Oracle of Delphi? Remember that? Oracle of Delphi. Somebody sends somebody to Delphi to talk to the Oracle and ask them, what do we do? We're in big trouble. And the Oracle comes back and says, ready for this? Safety shall be found. You ready for this? You're all kind of hanging on the edge, you see? Safety will be found behind the wooden wall. Behind the wooden wall. Themistocles, who is a great Athenian leader, is pondering this message. This is pondering. And he comes up with an interpretation, and he brings it to the people, and he says, this is what it means. Safety will be found in ships. Ships. That's how we're going to win this battle. And here's what he does. Ready? He gets this servant, and he says, you, I want you to go and bring a message to Xerxes, the king of Persia. And this is like, isn't this like science fiction? Can you even imagine this? Bring a message to the king, Xerxes. It's like, go to Nineveh and tell them. Go to Xerxes and tell them Themistocles, leader of the Athenians, has realized the error of his ways. And knowing that it's inevitable that we are going to die, I'm giving you the whole battle plan so you can come and wipe us out. And only remember me after the war's over and let me live. Spare my life. So this messenger goes, and Xerxes, Themistocles, Themistocles, heard all about him. Yeah, what about him? Well, Themistocles realizes that you, O king, are right. You're the great king of the world, the great king of the universe. You are right, and we don't have a chance. So he is going to set up the battle for you to conquer the Greeks. And all you have to do is follow his plan. All you have to do is follow his plan. And spare his life. Remember his life. Tell him it shall be done. But you must move quickly. All of the Athenians have moved to the island of Samos. And if you take your ships, O king, okay? See this? If you take your ships, see this? If you take your big, fat, bulky, unmaneuverable, gigantic ships into this little tiny bay... right here, you will catch them off guard, and you will attack the. You will finally wipe out the Greeks. That's it. They're all done. Xerxes buys it. Get the net. Get the net. He buys it hook, line, and sinker. Okay. So here's what he does now. He is psyched. Xerxes is absolutely psyched. Okay. He gets himself a perch on the top of a mountain. He orders that his royal portable throne, which he brought with him, all made out of gold, be brought to the top of the mountain. He's going to sit down and he's going to watch the show. He's sitting on the top of the mountain and he's looking, overlooking Samos Bay. Can you picture this now? And he's watching, and here they come. The big Persian ships. Now the Persian ships are not Persian ships. They're Phoenician ships. They're gigantic. They are absolutely the most ridiculous things in the world to be fighting a war with. They're not... you know, they are not sleek battleships. The Greeks have these little tiny quick things. You know what I mean? Little quick things with, and here's what else the Persian ships have. Big gigantic battering rams on the front of the ships to smash into other ships and sink them. Well, here's Xerxes watching. Here come his ships. This is going to be good. Watch this. The big stupid ships. I think of big. I'm looking for a lazy bumblebee. And they're coming into the channel. All of a sudden, out from behind the island come these little tiny Greek ships. They basically drive up to these big ships. They can't even maneuver themselves. And the Greeks start hatcheting holes in the sides of the Persian ships, and the Persian ships are floating in the bottom of the ocean, and Xerxes is watching, and he's saying, no, 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 this isn't even happening, and his ship plays, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. I'm looking for a lazy bumblebee, and the entire, listen, the just about the entire Persian fleet is wiped out. That is the Battle of Samos Bay. One of the greatest battles in the world. Well, Xerxes is humiliated. This is the end of the Persian Empire, folks. They never recover morally from this defeat. This is the end in all intents and purposes. By the time Alexander comes, we have a scared lunatic by the name of Darius III. This is after Xerxes. A scared lunatic by the name of Darius III saying, I'll give you my daughter, okay? I'll give you my daughter. Just let me live. I'll take everything on the west side of the Euphrates. Just let me live. And Alexander goes, no, I'm not going to let you live. Why should I? I'm just going to come in and take your land. I'm going to take everything. I'm Alexander the Great. And so this is where we are. They will never recover from this defeat. And as you know, Athens rebuilt itself and becomes a great intellectual capital of the world. This is the way the Persian Empire falls. Not specifically, their defeat doesn't come until Alexander comes, and we'll talk about that. We're going to be pressing on to the Greeks here. But this is the way that the Persian Empire falls, folks. It falls because of the humiliating defeat that they have at the hands of the Greeks. Three massive battles. Number one, the Battle of Marathon. fought only by the Athenians, and the Spartans weren't even there to help, and they still conquered them. The Battle of Thermopylae Pass, when those people are all bottlenecked in that pass, and only a few of them are allowed to go through at a time, and then 300 Spartans end up holding the breach, while the others skedaddle down, grab their stuff, grab their women and children, and head over to Samos Bay. Where they find refuge. And the Battle of Samos Bay, the most Actium, the Battle of Actium, that's the name of the battle between Mark Antony and all that, the sea battle, Battle of Actium. This is the first famous naval battle for sure, is the Battle of Samos Bay. Unbelievable. I mean, they're smashing into their ships and making the most thing. Yeah. Yeah, they ran the. Not only that, though, but they would get up close, and anything that they had, they would smash into the ship. The idea is to sink the ship. That's all they have to do. I mean, it's that simple. Doesn't it sound unbelievable? You wouldn't even think of that today, coming up to another ship and ramming it and hitting it and, you know, making something in the side of it. You know what I mean? But these little sleek boats, you know what? This guy answers the question. He gets into it. He gets into all three of these battles, and he says, he doesn't do it in as much detail as I would have liked, unfortunately, but he gets into these battles, and you know what he says? He asks the question, how do the big battalions lose? This is the dilemma with the Persians. The big battalions get creamed. The big ships get creamed. The million men lose to the 30,000 men. You know what? Discipline. Let me tell you something about the Persians. We've got a few minutes. A couple things about the Persians. Persians would conquer all these people. You know when they got all these men together? They all, you know, these 3 million men, according to this bird, or the 25,000, if we believe more conservative scholars. When this happens, all of these men that are in these armies are men of all different nations, all different satrapies. They all have their own language. About face!
Confusion.
What's that mean? They only understand one thing. Hey, hey! Ah! And fight. Yeah, that's it. And you know what's so brilliant about Alexander? Alexander's going to come in and he's going to conquer. He's going to conquer an area. And you know what he's going to do? All right, you're in charge of teaching them Greek. Teach them Greek. When I say about face, they better know what I'm talking about. He was brilliant. The man was brilliant. You take 30,000 men like that against a million men who can't even speak the same language, you're going to win every time. You get the idea? Why do the big battalions lose? I'll tell you what, I love it. This is a good book. Have I mentioned this book to you? This is called Anatomy of Error, Ancient Military Disasters and Their Lessons for Modern Strategists. You know what? I could never even leave a bookstore after looking at a title like this and not buy it. How can you walk by a book with a title like that? Ancient Military Disasters. Isn't that intriguing? We'll take it. Okay. I'm not going to keep you any longer than I have to. Thank you for coming. Any questions, comments, concerns, Bible questions, counseling needs, prayer requests?
Biblically in this area, the Jews already backed Jerusalem.
That exactly. All right. Good question. That's a very good point. To put it into a biblical perspective, and there isn't a lot in the Bible that deals with this, but let me put it in, plug it in for you very quickly. Cyrus is the king who gives the okay for the Jews to go back and rebuild the city. Okay? Cyrus is the king, the Persian king that does that. As you know, there's a 70-year captivity, that the Jews are in captivity for 70 years. Only part of that captivity is Babylonian, because in the middle of that captivity, the Persians overtake the Babylonians, remember? Or we could say the bear overtakes the lion, okay? The Persians are the ones who allow the Jews to go back into the nation. Now, an amazing thing is in Isaiah, if you look in your concordance, I don't have the verse written down for you, but if you look in Isaiah, you will see Cyrus's name in Isaiah's prophecy. Isaiah 45? In Isaiah 45, it mentions Cyrus by name 200 years before the man was born. By name, that there will be this guy, and this guy's name will be Cyrus, and he will come along and he's going to be important. 200 years by name in the Word of God, okay? This is one of the key points, by the way, where liberal scholars try to say, no, Isaiah couldn't have lived when you say he lived, because he wouldn't have been able to say this, because they don't know the power of our God, amen? So the idea is this, Cyrus, plug him into going back to rebuild, okay? Darius is very kind to the Jews. Why were the Persians prosperous? They were kind to the Jews. That's one of the great ways to study history, is the anti-Semitic approach. A nation that was, you know what, Alexander was very kind to the Jews. He was very good to the Jews, fair to them. Nations that have not been fair to the Jews, God says things like Nahum chapter 3, I am against you, O Assyria. Imagine that. You know what I'm going to do to you, Assyria? I'm going to lift your skirt above your head and expose your shame to the world so you'll be humiliated. I will throw filth upon you. I don't even want to translate that for you literally. I will throw the most vile filth you could imagine upon you, Assyria. And you know what? The nations are going to look at you. He goes, you know what? I don't even know where I'm going to find anyone to mourn for you. That's Nahum chapter 3. You can read it for yourself. Now, that's what happens when a nation is against Israel. God used Assyria to judge the 10 nations, right? In the north. However, God never forget. See, God uses their wickedness to judge his people, but he never forgot that they judged his people. You get the idea? He used them for his divine purpose, but at the same time he said, you messed up my people, guess what? I made my friend Abraham a promise that I would never forget anyone who did that. You curse my people, you're cursed. So the idea of the anti-Semitic clause in Genesis 12:3, is it? I believe it's Genesis 12:3. Those who you bless, I will bless. Those who you curse, I will curse. Okay? All right. Darius, who comes later, three generations later, after Cyrus, is instrumental in helping the Jews to rebuild, helping them financially, okay? And Xerxes the First, you plug him into what? Esther, Ahasuerus, okay?